And we return on this Monday afternoon. It's today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman. Well, this hour we discuss Common Core state education standards. 46 states and the District of Columbia have adopted them, but there is controversy. Some say the standards are an intrusion into local control and school boards. We'll speak with Chester Finn. He's the president of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute in Washington, D.C. Welcome to you, Mr. Finn. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much. Nice to be back with you.
Also, we're waiting to speak with Patricia Levesque. She's the chief executive officer of the Tallahassee-based Foundation for Excellence in Education, and we'll be waiting for her to join us.
And we're also waiting for the attorney T.J. Schmitz of the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, which, of course, Schmidt, which also is very much anti-core state education standards. So, Chester Finn, could you kind of give us a thumbnail background of Common Core state education standards?
Sure. For about 20 years, the states have been separately setting academic standards for their primary and secondary schools, grades usually K through 12, in a variety of subjects, but always including English and math. And they've been doing this partly because it's a good education reform to know what you'd like kids to learn before you organize to teach it to them, and partly because the federal government has said, in essence, if you want federal dollars, you have to set standards in these subjects. So states have done it, and most of them have done a bad job of it, frankly. My organization's been evaluating state academic standards across the country for 15 years, and only a handful of states have really done a good job at setting their own, according to our analysts and experts in these two subjects. Moreover, even the states that have done good jobs haven't been able to be compared from one to the next. So you don't know whether a kid in Springfield, Illinois, and Springfield, Massachusetts, and Springfield, Oregon, and Springfield, Ohio, you don't know how they're doing in relation to each other or how their schools are doing compared to each other, which is more and more of a problem in a modern mobile society. So about, 5 years ago, the governors and the state superintendents got together and said, could we do better if we tried to do a common standard that we would compare ourselves on? And they did. And in the summer of 2010, they came out with the so-called Common Core state standards for English and math. And almost immediately, very quickly, 45 states, including Florida, said they would use these instead of the ones they had come up with on their own. And our experts at Fordham evaluated these new Common Core standards and found that they're on their merits, in terms of content and rigor, better than what about three-quarters of the states had come up with on their own, and about equivalent to the other quarter. And that's where things stood in late 2010. And what's been happening since then is that a variety of organizations have been developing tests to go with the new standards, and publishers have been developing textbooks to go with the new standards, and so forth and so on. But a fair amount of objection has surfaced, actually, on both the left and the right. Most people talk about the right, but that's not the only source of disquiet about common standards that are high and rigorous and demanding. And I guess that's what we're talking about today.
Okay, but do believe we have T.J. Schmidt. He's an attorney for the Homeschooling Legal Defense Association. Mr. Schmidt, are you with us?
I am.
Okay, and you're an attorney for the region, the southern region, is that it?
Well, I have about 10 states that I'm responsible for. I wouldn't particularly categorize them in the southern region, but Florida is one of the states that I'm responsible for here at HSLDA.
Okay. So HSLDA, or Homeschooling Legal Defense Association, is opposed to Common Core state standards. Is that correct?
Yes, we are. And while the Common Core state standards are, you know, only directly applicable to public schools, we do have some pretty major concerns about the standards themselves as they could apply to homeschool families. Homeschooling families over the past 20-plus years have really had great success in providing a flexible individual educational program for their children. And that's one of the main reasons why we're concerned about the Common Core. The Common Core standards have really put a lot of pressure on both curriculum providers and also test publishers, standardized achievement test publishers, to adapt and change their curriculum and their tests to the Common Core state standards. And so our concern is that's going to limit the flexibility that parents would have in choosing their homeschooling curriculum. As far as the state testing goes, the standardized achievement testing goes, I mean, homeschool students, in just about every study that's ever been done on homeschooling students and evaluation on their progress, students perform between 25 to 35 percentile points above the national norm. So we're not as concerned that homeschooling students couldn't measure up, but the concern is that because they're limiting the tests only to the Common Core curricula, that it's going to hinder parents who maybe didn't teach this particular issue at this particular grade. And that's a major concern within our membership and within our families all across the country.
Chester Finn, your response to that?
Well, a fair number of homeschoolers, of course, don't take their state tests anyway, and so they wouldn't be affected by a change in state tests or state standards. And to the extent that state standards, be they the state's own standards or Common Core standards, to the extent that the state standards constrain the order in which things are taught, which I admit they do to a degree, that'd be an issue whether it's the Ohio standards or the Common Core standards. They are external standards that do limit the flexibility of educators, who parents included, who don't want to teach those things in those grades.
Would you comment on the recent comments from the Secretary of Education Duncan about the core standards created and this soccer mom's business that has stirred up so much?
Well, one of the reasons there's been a sort of a backlash against the Common Core, especially this one on the right, is because Arne Duncan and Barack Obama actually made, a significant mistake starting in 2010, which is that they erroneously allowed it to appear as if the federal government were behind all this, because they put money on the table to encourage states to adopt the Common Core standards. This, of course, gave pause to everybody that doesn't like either Barack Obama or Arne Duncan. And understandably so. It's not a federal initiative. Yes, there was some federal money on the table under the Race to the Top initiative. That money is pretty much all spent by now, by the way, and a lot of states that embraced the Common Core never got Race to the Top funding. But the soccer mom's comment, which I believe Duncan has since retracted or apologized for or something mm-hmm. like that, mm-hmm. Was just idiotic, frankly.
How much power or say does an individual state have regarding Common Core?
More than the critics would let on, because there's no Common Core police out there. Nobody's checking to see if a state or a district or an individual teacher teaches everything that's in the Common Core, or doesn't add to the Common Core, or subtract from the Common Core, or do it in a very different way. There's no sort of check up on this, except whatever the state test turns out to be. If the state test is carefully aligned with the Common Core, which may or may not happen, the testing part of this is still kind of up for grabs in many places, including Florida. If the test is carefully aligned with the Common Core, then major deviations from the Common Core might disadvantage the kids on the state test. Additions probably wouldn't. Significant subtractions might, or probably would. But there's nobody out there with a gun looking to see whether a school is adding or subtracting from the Common Core standards. Moreover, they're just standards. They say what the kids should have learned by the end of the year. They do not say what they should learn in October, or what they should learn in Unit 6, or what they should learn on Tuesday.
So basically, what's expected of students and at what age? Just a thumbnail.
At the end of each school year is I mean, the way the standards are organized is, here's what kids should have learned in English and math by the end of kindergarten. Here's what they should have learned by the end of first grade, et cetera, right up through 12th grade. With a whole, it's a 100 and some page document with a lot of backup. It's moderately specific, but it doesn't tell you what textbooks to use or what lessons to use to teach them. It says, you know, you should know your multiplication tables by the end of fourth grade, that kind of thing.
Okay, we need to take a break. I believe.
Why don't we take the break, then we'll come
Patricia
back.
Patricia Levesque is with us?
Yes.
Okay, we're speaking with Chester Finn. He's the president of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute in D.C. Patricia Levesque will be joining us. She's the CEO of the Tallahassee-based Foundation for Excellence in Education.
And also attorney T.J. Schmidt of the Homeschooling Legal Defense Association.
So let's take our break, and then we'll be back with you. With today's topical currents, Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. And we're speaking to Chester Finn, the president of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute. We're speaking about Common Core State Standards today. Also with us is T.J. Schmidt, attorney for the Homeschooling Legal Defense Association. And joining us now is Patricia Levesque. She's the chief executive officer of the Tallahassee-based Foundation for Excellence in Education. Welcome to you.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us where things stand today in Florida now regarding Common Core.
Patricia.
So hi, it's Patricia. Yeah. Common Core state standards were adopted by the Florida Board of Education in 2010, and there has been an implementation plan starting back in 2010 to fully roll out the standards in the state. So kindergartners, first and second graders have been learning the Common Core State Standards for a couple of years now. This particular school year, all students are learning in grades 3 through 10 a blend of the old Sunshine State Standards and the new Common Core State Standards. And then starting next school year, every classroom will fully move to the Common Core State Standards.
So we're phasing out the FCAT. What is the common consensus among teachers and students regarding that?
Well, I think, you know, any state test has detractors. I think no matter what state you go to, there's animosity with any type of you know, high-stakes test. But in Florida, I think there's a great interest among teachers and among parents that we've spoken with in moving to better tests that will measure critical thinking skills and not just rote memorization and, you know, students' ability to do multiple choice. And so we're excited to see the state move to hopefully better assessments that are aligned to these new standards.
T.J. Schmidt, we haven't heard from you for a few minutes. You have any comments on what's been going on, what's been said?
Well, I think Chester raised an interesting point that I wanted to follow up on, and that was the state assessments. Now, while homeschool students are not required to take the state assessments, in fact, federal law prohibits homeschool students from being required to take those, about half of the states do require homeschool students to take some sort of assessments. And our second primary concern at HSLDA about the Common Core is the fact that all of these states are developing, while Florida has kind of recently stepped out of the partnership for assessment of readiness for college and careers, all of the states are developing either through PARC or through their own individual resources assessments to evaluate how they're meeting the Common Core state standards.
What is PARC, by the way? I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Well, PARC stands for Partnership for Assessment of Readiness for College and Careers.
Okay.
And again, as the title indicates, it's really trying to assess children's readiness for college and careers. And it's very tightly tied with the Common Core. And many states had signed on to PARC to develop the national assessment to verify whether or not their students were, in fact, meeting the Common Core state standards. And so this is a concern that homeschoolers have, is that the concern that colleges will require homeschool students, as any other student, to meet either a park assessment or some other state assessment to verify that they met the Common Core state readiness requirements. Now, as I said, homeschool students, in just about any assessment that you throw at them, whether it be standardized achievement tests, SAT, PSAT, ACT, do exceptionally well. But the problem, again, is the fact that this could become an additional hurdle for homeschool students to get into colleges, that they have to take these state assessments or national assessments. And I think it's just very concerning to parents and limiting the potential flexibility.
Couldn't they just exempt homeschool students, Chester or Patricia?
Well, this is Patricia.
Go ahead.
I think certainly, you know, states just like Florida has never required home education students to take the state assessment. I think the concern for homeschoolers having another bar of tests to take, you know, maybe in some states, because those states already overregulate home education, but to get into most colleges today, and we expect it to remain in the future, students are going to need to take the SAT or ACT. I think that's what the vast majority of public or private institutions of higher education rely on as some measure of whether or not a student is ready for college. And so the SAT and ACT still remain those banner assessments, and we don't see them being changed just because states now are using a common set of standards for academic expectations.
We're talking about...
Well,
go on. That's Chester
quick
Finn.
Addition. Quick addition, because the ACT folks, I think, are heading toward aligning their exam with the Common Core anyway, regardless of what states do, and the SAT people are talking about doing that. So I'm not sure that from a homeschooler standpoint it will end up mattering whether their state is doing the Common Core or not when it comes to getting into college.
Mr.
Well, and I was going to raise that point as well. Again, this is TJ. That is the obvious concern. Both the ACT and the SAT are going to be closely aligning to the Common Core state standards. And again, I don't know that the homeschooling community has a concern so much as to the particular standards. I mean, it's not HSLDA's purpose to review individual standards, but I would point out the fact that the Common Core standards currently are just in English and in math. These are the least controversial subjects out there. And while many people have raised some specific concerns about some of the state standards themselves, I think the overall homeschooling community's concern is not primarily the actual standards or the fact that they won't be able to measure up to those standards. The concern is that it's limiting the flexibility that they have to educate their children as they see fit and determining when those children need to be educated in appropriate areas. And I think that's really been effective for homeschooling families to have the individual educational programs that are best for their children.
What happens if some of these homeschooling parents are kind of lousy teachers and then their kid becomes of age and can't get into college?
Well, I would say that while that may occasionally happen, I think you'll find that that it happens across all spectrums. You know, there are some children who go through private school and aren't adequately educated, and there's some who go through public school and aren't adequately educated. I think that a homeschooling environment, though, creates a situation where the child is most able to be ready for whether they go on to college or if they're going to go into a career or vocation.
We're speaking about Common Core state standards on today's Topical Currents. If you have a question or comment for any of our guests, please join us. If you're a homeschooled student or parent, a homeschooler, homeschooling parent, or anybody else, 1-800-743-9576, or if you're in a public school, whatever the case, 1-800-743-9576, or you can email radio@wlrn.org. One question I had, Mr. Finn, is why do we need education standards, national education standards?
Well, we've gotten by for a long time, of course, without them, but I think we haven't done very well educationally. Some new international test results are coming out tomorrow, comparing the U.S. with other countries, and I don't think we're going to be thrilled with how we're doing, as we have not been thrilled with how we're doing for the last 20 years on these international comparisons. Standards, when they're properly put into operation, properly implemented, have a pretty significant effect on textbooks, on teacher preparation, on assessments, on state accountability arrangements. Of course, a district or school or state could do its own. As I mentioned earlier, most states, in our judgment, have done a poor job of it on their own. Mm-hmm. I think the comparability point is important in a shrinking planet in the modern world, that you ought to want to know how your kids or your schools are doing versus similar kids and schools in other states and indeed other countries. And you also ought to be able, if you move from one place to another, to have some reasonable expectation that your fifth grader in Florida is going to encounter something similar if they move to Texas or California or Minnesota, and not have to not be completely sort of befuddled by what the schools are doing differently there.
Generally, how do teachers, I don't know if you have statistics on this, how they feel about these reforms and changes? And what's to say, we've had so many in the past, how do we know Common Core is here to stay?
Well, this is Patricia.
I'd like Patricia to address that also, yeah.
Sure.
Go ahead, Patricia.
Regarding the issue of standards, I want to make sure that your audience is really clear as to what a standard is. And a standard is nothing more than an end-of-year expectation. So, and I'm going to talk about kindergarten standards because my son is in kindergarten. So a standard, a math standard in kindergarten for Florida now under the Common Core State Standards is that students by the end of kindergarten need to know how to count to 100, and they need to know how to count by tens to get to 100 by the end of the year. In English, a kindergarten standard is that students need to learn to read from left to right, top to bottom, page to page. They need to know that sentences start with a capital letter and end with a punctuation mark. Those are end-of-year expectations in reading and math for kindergarten. And so every state has standards, and they had standards before. It's just that in many states, the expectations, like it was in Florida, were really low. So in Florida, previous kindergarten math standards were that students only needed to count to 20 by the end of the year. Having higher and harder standards will better prepare our students to be successful when they go on to college or to into a career. Your question, as do teachers, how do teachers feel about the standards? Many groups have done polling and research of not only teachers in Florida, but teachers across the country. Mm-hmm. And teachers overwhelmingly support the Common Core State Standards. And they support them for many reasons. One is that they're clearer. They're much clearer as to what exactly the teacher needs to successfully accomplish with a child before the end of the year. Their teachers also support them because there are fewer standards. And so why is fewer better? And the reason is pretty simple. You know, before, state standards, which were developed by teachers in kind of this collegial manner where one teacher would say, well, I think permutations and combinations are really important. And another teacher would say, I think estimating and rounding is really important. And so in any given academic year, teachers may have had 50 different academic standards to cover in a 36-week school year. And so they were having to cover at a pace where they actually couldn't teach in really great detail. And they had to move on to a new standard before all the kids in the classroom might have actually mastered the concept. Now, with an average of 25 to 35 standards per grade level, teachers will be able to teach things like fractions much more in depth. They'll be able to spend much more time making sure the students in their classroom master these core standards that they're going to need to be successful in the future. So teachers support them because they're clearer and there are fewer standards, so they can teach more deeply. And I do think that since teachers across the country have for several years now been being trained on how to teach the new standards, where most of them realize how much better these standards will be for students, I do think the standards themselves will withstand the test of time. I think because the SAT and the ACT, kind of two very well-respected tests for college entrance, are going to be aligning to the standards, you're going to see parents in schools wanting to make sure that they're following the academic expectations that are going to prepare a child to get into college. And I think as a parent myself, one of the things that I really appreciate about the standards is that there's going to be kind of a level playing field for my child in pursuit of college. I'm going to know exactly what my child needs to master in order to successfully be prepared to do well on the SAT or ACT and get into a great college.
TJ Schmidt, attorney for the Homeschooling Legal Defense Association, we were told earlier that you couldn't stay with us for the full hour, so you're welcome to comment on that and say goodbye, or you're also welcome to stay with us for the full hour if you would.
Well, I do have to run, but I appreciate the time available. And as I said, the Homeschool Legal Defense Association is just concerned about the flexibility, the limitation for homeschooling families. And I would encourage families to who are interested in seeing our reasons and more particular issues in opposition to the Common Core to look at www.hslda.org/Common Core.
Before you go, we have caller number three. It's not going on. Yes, I'm in conference. Why don't we... We'll say goodbye to you, Mr. Schmidt, and thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Patricia Levesque, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Just to comment or just to ask you a question about what you were just saying, I guess, there was all this that the FCAT meant you were teaching to the test and, this is going to be more critical thinking and more creative. Isn't what you just described still teaching to the test, though?
So I think there's been a confusion among, a lot of folks on teaching to the test and teaching to the standards. I think it's, the example that I just gave, I could give you a third grade example. If the third grade standards require kids to be able to add, subtract, and multiply fractions, then the third grade state test is going to measure whether or not students can add, subtract, and multiply fractions. And so when a teacher is teaching, whether you call it teaching to the test or teaching to the standards, they're going to be teaching students how to add, subtract, and multiply fractions. And so that's a good thing to have the standards covered. I had been working with several teachers that worked on the Florida test, the FCAT, and I had asked some of them, why are some of your fellow teachers not as supportive of the test as you are? You teach, these teachers who actually develop the test questions. And the answer that came back from these teachers was, the test actually makes sure all the standards are covered. And I said, well, what do you mean by that? And this was a science teacher that I was talking to, and I know we're not talking about science standards today, but the teacher said, in two different classrooms, before there was a state science test, you could have one teacher who really likes the rainforest spending 2 months talking and teaching about the rainforest and actually not covering, 10 or 15 different standards that the state requires in science. But once there's a test that's given, teachers know at any given year, not all of the standards can be measured on the tests. So teachers need to actually schedule out their lesson plans in order to teach all the standards. And so that teacher might not have liked the fact that she now needed to cover precipitation and condensation and some other things, and she didn't get to spend as much time on the rainforest as she would have liked. And so teaching to the test, if that means teaching the standards that the state requires, is a good thing. If teachers are just teaching test-taking skills, which is in a multiple choice, always rule out the answer that you know is not the correct answer and do your best guess. Well, that's not a good thing. Teaching test-taking skills is not a good thing. And that's why moving to these standards that are much deeper and more will require tests that measure more critical thinking skills. So the state will need to start moving away from just multiple choice, multiple guess testing. That'll be better for our students in the long run, and it will really help to make sure that we're actually accomplishing what we want to, which is preparing kids for successful college or careers.
Let's take a telephone call. We've got Harvey. He's in Key West. Hi there.
Yes, the single most important thing in a democracy is that young children know there are other kinds of people in the world. Homeschooling and charter schools may give better education, although that's not proved. But what it certainly does is cut the pie into smaller and smaller slices where children know only people like themselves. And one of the chief, or maybe the main function of public education, which started in the 1820s, is responsible for America as it looks today, is that even more important than learning math is they learn that there are other kinds of people around them. And if they get a great education in a vacuum, privately, the entire complexion of America would within 15 years, where people don't know who the other people are and they don't care, and you disintegrate.
Well, we don't have Mr. Schmidt from the Homeschooling Legal Defense Association with us, but we certainly appreciate your call. Any comment from either Mr. Finn or Patricia Levesque?
He makes a good point, but I, you know, what I would like to talk about is the difference between how having these higher common standards actually allows for multitude of teaching curriculum and methodology in order to meet the new standards. And that's something that's misunderstood. Some people believe that having common standards means that you have common curriculum and that all teachers are going to have to teach the same way. And that is just not the case. In fact, I like giving an example that I've heard someone else give that equates to football. So if you think of the standards as being the rules of the game, so the rules of football are that teams need to advance 10 yards in order to make a down, and they have 4 opportunities to do this. But the number of plays that a coach can call in order to advance those 10 yards is limitless. There are hundreds of plays in a coach's playbook, and that's sort of like the curriculum. You know, teachers now know here's the expectation in kindergarten. Students need to know how to count to 100 by the end of the year. Students need to learn to read from left to right, top to bottom, page to page. But the books that the teacher uses and how the teacher teaches those standards really is limitless. And so there's going to be a greater ability to have that creativity that exists out there among our teaching force in order to meet the new standards. Teachers are going to be able to share ideas now across state lines that they haven't been able to do in the past because we had different expectations for our children from state to state.
Chester Finn, did you want to add anything?
No, we can't do justice today to the entire argument about school choice and all the different forms that it can take. Let me just repeat that the Common Core standards do set a set of goalposts or yard markers, as Patricia is suggesting, that states may use, schools may use, test makers may use. They don't dictate how we organize our schools, though, or whether we give people choices among them, all those other kinds of issues.
Let's take another phone call before we take a break. This is Dane. He's in Margate. Hi.
Hi, I was originally calling for the attorney, but he left, so I'll just pose the question to the rest of your guests. Have you guys heard any sort of credible voices on the other side regarding the standards and its negative effects? Because from the conversation so far, I just don't see a downside. I'm having a hard time wrapping my mind around why someone would consider this a bad thing. And so, have you guys heard any?
I think part of it is this idea of having Big Brother in local schools.
But that's not what it is, though. It's a standard that you
I'm saying that's what some are saying.
Okay.
I could probably give a whole speech attempting to mimic or replicate what the critics say, because we've been at this conversation now for some months. But I think the biggest negative, frankly, is going to be what I'll call failed implementation of these standards by states and districts, so that you've got, I think, excellent aspirations for what sixth graders should know by the end of the year in English and math, but if those do not reverberate into decisions that schools and teachers and states and districts make about curriculum and pedagogy and teacher preparation and textbook selection and a whole bunch of other things, then they're not going to actually have any traction on the ground in the real world, and it will turn out to have been a failure in terms of academic achievement by American kids.
You're hearing the voice of Chester Finn. He's the president of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute in Washington, D.C. Also, Patricia Levesque is the chief executive officer of the Tallahassee-based Foundation for Excellence in Education. On today's Topical Currents, a short break, and we'll be right back with you.
And we return. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, Chester Finn, and Patricia Levesque. And we're talking about Common Core state education standards. Let's go back to our phones. This is Ileana in Miami. Hi. Ileana? I guess she's not there. And we'll try Alvin in West Palm Beach. Hi there.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
This is West Palm Beach, Harold. That's
yes, go ahead.
I totally agree with the gentleman that feels that kids should go to school with a mixed population where they see other people different from themselves. That's number one. Number two, I think that standardized test is not the best test for kids completely. I think it should be a mixed test. Some should be where they are able to express themselves, and some standardized test. I also feel that a lot of parents that are homeschooling are not equipped intellectually to really pass on great information to the kid. And I feel that in many instances, when kids go to colleges, they know what they want when they get there, some.
But as our previous guest said, sure there's good homeschoolers and some aren't very good, but he also mentioned that sometimes schools are the same way, that you're not necessarily guaranteed of getting a quality education.
And thank you for your call. We have an emailer. Are these standards being put into place only to continue with yearly testing? Is there any evidence, even internationally, that testing less frequently than yearly frees up funds beneficial to classroom education and that those funds make a difference in progress? Mr. Finn?
Well, you've just opened the Pandora's box of where some of the opposition from the left is coming from, actually, on Common Core, which is the people that don't like testing. And I think there's a widespread agreement in the education world, and certainly in my own head, that we do too much testing, but that's because we layer one test on top of another rather than substituting a good test for a bad test. Annual testing is probably not going to go away from American education. Right at the moment, it's built into federal policy and state policy, and it's often the only way to know whether kids learned anything in fifth grade as opposed to carrying forward things they learned in fourth grade.
And I think it's here to stay, honestly, whether we like it or not. I'm not aware of any international data that we get better results or save more money by skipping years on the testing. And let me note, too, that the actual testing itself costs like $20, $30 per kid per year out of 10,000 that we typically spend per kid per year in American public education. A more important question is whether a lot of class time is lost to test prep, to which my answer anyway is if the teaching has been effective all year, you don't need to have a cram session when the test time comes around.
Is Common Core going to create more testing, less testing, or the same amount?
Well, the end of the year testing should be the same amount, assuming that the states don't add it to something else, but instead substitute it for the end of the year tests that they have already been giving, at least in grades 3 through 8, which is a federal requirement right now for all public schools that get federal money, which is basically all of them. Common Core. Some of the groups that are preparing new Common Core tests are also trying to prepare what they regard as useful teacher-centric tests that could be given several times during the year so that the teacher will get feedback on whether her kids are learning what they should be learning before the year is completely gone.
Let's take another call. We're getting close to the end of the program. This is Sue in Tavernier. Hi.
Hi. I don't even know where to start. I'm a little disappointed that there's not a lot of side against the Common Core outside of the homeschool range, because I think that sidetracked the discussion a bit.
We tried to get other guests.
Yes, I understand that. But so I'm going to try to summarize what, as a parent of a public school student, why I'm not so crazy about the Common Core. And as I understand, there were very few educators in the initial developing of these standards, that they were many corporate entities that were poised to benefit from the standards financially. I think that it's all based on this idea that American schools are failing is debatable. You know, our test scores are not much different than they were in the 50s, and the generation that went through public school in the 50s went on to develop Microsoft and Apple and are leaders of the world in ingenuity. So I think our school system was working then. I think it was working recently. I think that when it's disingenuous for this man to say that the accountability standards, that if teachers teach to the test, it's just bad teaching, because my children go to a public school here that's an A-plus school. 90% of the children perform on or above grade level. Our funding is tied to us maintaining that A-plus standard, and the stress on the teachers and on the administration to perform, you know, that 1% higher is just incredibly intense. And nobody whose jobs are dependent on how well children do are going to be able to not teach to the test. We have great teachers where we are, but even they do it.
Okay. We're getting very close to the end of the program.
This is Patricia, and I'd love to jump in on this discussion to say, you know, we've been talking a lot about the standards, and I think a position that both Checker Finn and I hold is that the standards in and of themselves are not some miracle cure. Just because a state adopts high standards doesn't mean that students are now going to start learning more. But there has to be really good measurement, fair measurement, and an accountability system with rewards and consequences, because those are the things that we have seen not only in our state, but across the country that have really worked to drive student performance. And I'll give you an example. Since Florida started actually measuring, so when we started having a state test and started measuring according to whether or not children were learning to the standards that our teachers had said were important, and we started grading schools. We started measuring schools as to whether or not they were actually making sure students were learning. our graduation rates in the state have increased by more than 20%. Florida used to be third from the bottom on national assessments, and we have been in the top 10 in the last 3 out of 4 years, actually 4 out of 5 years, in some of these tests. So we know that measuring whether or not our students are meeting the standards and holding the adults accountable for making sure students actually are given a high-quality education has resulted in incredible student learning. Florida leads the country in so many measures now because we measure. We measure because we care whether or not students are learning. And I, for one, as a mom, am really thankful that we're going to have that measurement. I want to make sure that my son and soon my daughter, when she enters the public school system, are getting a quality education. And the way that I know that is I know through an objective measurement that he or she is being taught what the expectations of the state are.
We have to
leave it there. I'm so sorry. That's the voice of Patricia Levesque.
Thank you both.
She's the executive director for the Foundation for Florida's Future, and it's the foundationforfloridasfuture.org. Thank you so much for joining us. Chester Finn is a former professor of education and is currently the president of the nonprofit Thomas B. Fordham Foundation in Washington, D.C. Thank you both very much.
My pleasure.
And thanks for listening. Our apologies to those callers we couldn't get to. Our producer is Richard Ives, technical direction from online producer Paul Leary. We have free audio archives and downloads at our website, wlrn.org. Also, more information and links at our Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow's program is about persuasion, influence, and turning adversaries into allies. We'll speak with author Bob Berg. Could you talk your way out of a ticket? And the calendar. On this day in 1946, 67 years ago, the birth of fashion designer Gianni Versace in Reggio, Italy. He opened his first boutique in Milan in 1978. Of course, he was murdered outside his Miami Beach mansion in the summer of 1997. And on this day in 1981, 32 years ago, the birth of Britney Jean Spears in Macomb, Mississippi. She sang on the Star Search program at age 11. Oops, I Did It Again. And one more on this day, 1993, 20 years ago, Colombian drug baron Pablo Escobar is shot to death, ending a massive manhunt in Medellin. The pursuit lasted 15 months and cost hundreds of millions of dollars. So we leave with a thought from Britney, whose 8th album is now released, quote, "The cool thing about being famous is traveling. I've always wanted to travel across seas, like to Canada and stuff." It's an old quote. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, stay tuned now for Here and Now from NPR News.